It was our fantasy football draft.
Oh, during, so bogus.
During this pool party. And, you know, I'm off in the corner of this pool party and I'm trying not to get it splashed as I pick, you know, all my important picks. And this woman walks up to the fence, you know, where she sees me and she goes, "How do I get into this pool party?" And I was like, "Who's this person? Like, what is she asking me? Like, you just keep walking around there. I'm trying to pick, lady, you know, just
barf me out."
And as she walks around, I was like, "I think I know that person," you know? And she comes in and I was like, "Oh my God, that's Alicia Silverstone." And like, of course, like people our age, the Gen Xers, I had a crush on Alicia Silverstone back in the day.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello, Ted. It's episode 114 of the Trailer Junkies podcast. How are you this week?
I'm good. How are you, my friend?
Going stir crazy.
Yeah, you think so?
Well, it's week five. We've been in the house, and I'm about to lose my mind because is your house as much of a cluttered mess as my house? My God, the boys take stuff out, don't put it away. I get after them, put the stuff away. I mean, it is like all day long. I can't keep up with the mess, man. And like, and they kind of clean it up because when I'm getting on their case, but I feel like all I do is like either ignore it and the mess grows or I yell and everybody's upset.
There is nothing between those two extremes. Yes, I agree with you, my friend. Yeah. However, I guess I'm more like your children than you. I do not care that there's a mess about me.
Okay.
I can function as long as I can move within my turning radius. If I can turn my head and look from one monitor to the other monitor, that's all the mobility that I need to do my job. So
that's all you need. That's all you need. Screw center and Chris Hemsworth. You just need to turn your head 3 degrees.
Oh, I mean, you know, Audrey and I, you know, we still go running every day in the morning. Okay, now good. I've gotten her into doing that. She's excited, and we run at least a couple miles, if not three. We run walk, you know. I'm not going crazy, but Barbara made us some nice masks recently. Audrey went and got them, and then yesterday Bryce and I broke them in. And we're wearing them now on our bike rides because in the morning when Audrey and I go, I'm like, I cannot wear a mask to go running. You know,
I can't
suck wind through this mask. So I was like, I just go early enough. I don't see anybody. And if I see somebody, Audrey and I cross the street, you know, we don't get anywhere within, you know, 15, 20 feet of anybody. So that's us. But in the afternoon with Bryce, when he wants to go biking, like I'll put a mask on to go biking. So that's our routine we're slipping into. It's like taking dogs for a walk kind of thing. I feel like with the kids, you got to get them like exercise them out of, the stir craziness.
So that leads me to my next question. And I mean, is it me or is like everybody drinking too much?
Yes. Everyone is drinking too much. I've heard that. Some
okay.
States,
let's open beers then.
Some states are like shutting down their packies and stuff in New England because apparently drinking is making COVID-19 worse.
Yeah, it's like an immunosuppressant, so they say. I don't know, but
yeah, I'm doing so much physical distancing, it doesn't matter.
But let's open the beers.
Yes. You go first, my friend.
Oh, okay, sure. I'll go first. But I look at it like, you know, a virus can't live in a body full of alcohol, you know? I mean, hey, they want you to wipe down surfaces with alcohol. I'm going to wipe down my liver with alcohol. I'm going kind of lightweight this week, and I'm keeping it local. We got an IBU of 12.
Nice.
And
IBU
of 12.
Oh, okay.
ABV of 5.2, and this is Solvang Brewing Company right here in Lompoc, California. Blue-eyed blonde lager, and this is the beer that started the brewery. So the two dudes, Steve and I don't know his buddy, but as legend has it, they sat down and had a beer, and they hashed out their business plan and opened up the brewery that's right here in town. So I figure, you know, hey, with so many people doing who knows what, shopping wherever they are, like sometimes you got to keep things local. So yeah, so just a can. It's a lager, so I mean, it's typical. It gets away from our ales that we typically have, which, you know, hey, that's cool.
Oh, lagers.
And I'll have to say, of all the different lagers out there, I would argue this is probably one of the best I've ever had. It is really solid. I like it because it's more of a full-bodied lager. Sometimes lagers are a little bit too light for me. They're a little...
Yes.
They're good for summer. Like, you get done cutting the grass, it's hot, you know, you have like a PBR, you know, but...
No way.
No, but I mean, this is like super crisp, clean, refreshing, great for a Friday night. You know, what else can I say? How about you?
Awesome. So tonight I have a New Amsterdam martini, dirty martini.
What? Wait, what happened to the epic brewing picture that
I was, I'm joking. I have a skosh left of my martini.
Oh, okay.
So let me just,
You're like Dean Martin, you know, and the chairman of the board and everything, you know, you guys are there like Sinatra having your martinis and, you know, you thinking you're like going to Vegas or something.
Oh, I'm not going to Vegas for a long time, my friend.
But talking about masks, though, really quick. So yes. Clarissa was going to stop at Albertson's on the way home, and she pulls up, and they said, can't enter the store without your face covered. So she's like, you know, she's an RN, so she doesn't have any mask on her. So she's like, well, I guess I'll go home. So she said, well, what am I going to do? I don't have any masks. I said, just go Jesse James style.
Right.
Go get a bandana, wrap that thing around, and just go for it, you know? And just don't pretend like you're going to stick up the joint. They might take you serious. So while you're finishing your martini and before we get into beer, let's talk Tavor really quick.
Okay, yeah. So I guess somebody somewhere, some advertising worked and it got to me and it was served up to me. I forget where. But yeah, it came up. Maybe Instagram, I think, maybe possibly.
Okay.
And what is your, you had some, and I was like, oh, I have to invite a friend to get $10. And I guess I invited you, but I was like, I don't want to like, I'm not going to force you to buy anything here. But I bought a couple of beers for $11, you know, I've done worse. So, but it had a couple of Fremonts in there and I was like, oh, let me try this Fremonts. Oh, they're sold out. Let me just see how much they cost, even though they're sold out. It was $70 for two Fremonts. I was like, yeah, I'd like the barrel aged for 4 years, but come on guys. Like that's top notch Fremont. You know, it's $26 at Handy Market and I'm still not buying it. So there's a premium on there.
Yeah. And let me say a couple of complaints that I have, right? So okay. I was on this app about, oh, maybe 3 years ago, I want to say.
Uh-huh.
And the way it was then, and what I'm reading now, it's a little bit different, it seems. So the way it was then was, it was like $10 a shipment, and you could put in as many beers or as few beers. If you had one beer, it was $10 for the shipment. Or if you had 100 beers, it was $10 for the shipment.
No way.
That was kind of the way it works. Now it looks like it's $15 for a shipment, but if you have a subscription, The shipping cost is waived.
Mm.
Okay, I could get behind the subscription side of it. Like you just throw your beers in whatever beers you choose and somehow it's subscribed. I'm not really sure if it's like the same beers every month or what that subscription looks like. But to save your $10, well, I guess now $15 a month. But when I was on in the past and it got turned on to me, I opened it up like on a website. Because I remember learning about it and I came home and I just Googled it and opened it up and I was like, oh, this is cool. And I went through and I looked at all their beers and stuff and I'm like, you know, sure. And I think I did like 2 or 3 months and then I stopped. Maybe over that time I had like 30 or 40 beers because I just like went hog wild. I figured it's $10 for shipping either way. So I got a bunch of beers and then I canceled it and then I drank those beers and I never got back on. So now you turn me back on to it because I forgot about it.
Yeah.
You turn me back on to it. And I'm like, okay, I go back to the website. You can't look at any beers. It pretty much directs you right to the app. All right, fine. I'll bite. So I download the app.
Yeah.
Sign up or log in. That's all you get. You can't browse anything. You can't do anything unless you sign up. So my complaint is twofold. One is, I want to like browse the beers. I want to see what you guys have. I want to see what prices are. I want to see all this stuff before I jump in and, you know, start signing up and passwords and the whole thing, creating accounts and putting in credit cards. And, you know, I don't want to do all that right now. I just want to look and see what they have.
Of course.
So they don't have it on the website. And I'm thinking like, well, I like working on a website with these kinds of things because I want to see like the big picture of it. And I want to see like your description and your food pairings and all this stuff in one. I don't want to have to scroll. I just want to see it on the page. So I go to the, like I said, the app on the phone, and the best I could do is sign up. And I don't remember. I don't even remember if I had a log. I mean, I probably did have a login. I don't know what it is. But the point I'm getting at is, come on, give me like, throw me like, you know, I mean, what are you hiding from me that I can't just browse the beers and the website and all this stuff? Like, I don't want to sign up right now before I know anything about it.
Well, I mean, I would take it one step further. Like, I saw the same thing and then I did sign up. I was even intrigued enough to sign up. And then after I sign up, you can only look at like a handful of beers. And they talk about hundreds of beers. They talk about all these beers that you have at your other as their offerings. But they only had to offer, they only showed you like 10 beers and only one or two of them were available. The rest were sold out. And it was crazy. It was like, I was like, all right, I'll bite, I'll pay $11 for two beers. And I did that. And I was like, I'll try to invite you. I was going to invite Frank, but I'm like, I don't know. Frank will try to share a beer with Frank later. But yeah, it really was much more limited than I expected, but I was willing to give it a shot, you know, try to support some independent brewing. I will say that I think part of the reason that I kind of gave it a lot of leeway is the membership of Naked Wine. We're members of Naked Wine. And Naked Wine is a Napa Valley, Sonoma consortium of wineries, of small vineyards up there. And I don't know if I ever showed you this, but they give you like a first-time box, first-time case, $100 off, and you get to mix and match the case. And they have like, I would say dozens, you know, if not over 100 different wines to choose from sparkling to rosé to red and white. And obviously we're not affiliated with them, but I do have a code, you know, like, you know, mention our name and we'll get some money and they'll get some money. But we gave all those codes away to all of our family and friends. And it's a good deal. It's a different kind of club, you know, when you join a vineyard or join a wine club, you pay every month or every quarter and you get a couple bottles or
exactly
whatever. Yeah. And you get the bottles that they give you. And because this is a club of a group of vineyards, you basically pay in every month $40, you know, you pay in your $40. And you pay in your $40 as you go, and then you build an account. And they use your money to, you know, pay out to the vineyards and see how much, you know, they just use your money and you have an account growing with them. So at the end of, you know, 6 months, when you have enough money in your account, you can just go in and select wines and make a case and they ship a case off to you with a couple free wine bottles in there for you, you know, as a gift or whatever. So I just love this idea of like, you know, $40 a month going out of your account. You don't even feel it. You don't notice it. And then all of a sudden they're reminding you, you have like a couple $100 here. Like you need to
buy a case. Wine shows up.
Yeah. You need to buy a case. And I go shopping for the case and she's like, just get as close to spending all the money that's in our account, you know, so that we get a nice full case, you know, and we got 15 bottles last, you know, a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago. And, you know, we're down and we're almost ready to get another one because of COVID-19.
Yeah. And that probably works well for you guys because Anne, she prefers wine over beer.
Yeah. 100%.
And in our house, we prefer beer over wine.
Right.
We are members of Firestone Winery, which then gets his wines from, you know, Foley and a few others. But yeah, you're right about it's the you pay quarterly and then you get the wine that they give you. And we drink wine so infrequently that sometimes three bottles a quarter. And then next thing you know, I'm trying to figure out where to store it all because, you know, because we don't drink wine that often, you know. So
right, right.
I could get behind a beer club. And I looked then after this one and I tried to figure out, like, all right, alternatives to Tovor. And I tried to find like some alternatives, and there's a number of alternatives, and they give you the older experience that I was expecting, where you can browse various beers. And then some of them are weird too. It's like, really, Miller Lite is on your list? Like, why would I order Miller Lite from Boston or something, or wherever this place is, this one company was located? They had all like all the typical liquor store fodder,
right?
That one would expect, you know, all the Miller Lite-ish type stuff, Bud Light, you know, all the Miller products and St. Pauli Girl and stuff you could get anywhere, you know what I mean? But
right.
But then they did have some like awesome looking Belgian ales that I've never seen. They had some awesome IPAs and stouts and stuff that I've never even heard of. And I thought like, okay, I could get behind these, but they gave me that like taste, you know, like, hey, here's what you could have,
right?
Just sign up, you know, instead of giving me a sign up screen and I don't even know what's behind the wall
before you even look. Yeah, that's amazing.
And from what it was 3 years ago and what I saw today, it did put me off a little bit in so far as like, okay, maybe you guys grew a little bit in that time and you got more popular and such, but you should still give me like the ability to browse and everything, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no reason to put browsing behind a, you know, a sign-in wall, you know what I mean? It's crazy.
Exactly.
I finished the last sip of that martini, so I'm ready to crack my beer for the evening.
Let me ask though, gin or vodka martini?
You know, the wife does not like gin, so we are doing vodka martinis. Are they still martinis?
Vodka martinis. Oh yeah, they're still martinis. Now, are you doing them, like, how are you making them? Like, what do you do? Because, I mean, are you using vermouth?
I do vermouth, I do vodka, and then a lot.
Like a splash of vermouth.
Yeah, you know, a splash of vermouth and then, you know, a lot of olive, onion and Tom Olive juices.
Oh, so you're making them dirty.
Dirty martini. But the Tom Olive is by far my favorite. It is actually a pickled green tomato.
Okay.
And it looks like an olive. It's an olive size, so they call it a Tom Olive, and it's amazing.
Right, I've seen them. I've had them.
Yeah, so we got a four pack of that the first week of coronavirus quarantine. So essential wear.
You made a run on the Tom Olive oil? The Tom Olive aisle?
Yeah, I was out looking for Tom Olives. I went to like four grocery stores before they shut everything down. Well, they didn't really shut grocery stores down, but before they even made people go home. But when we were still like at work working, I was out looking for these Tom Olives and I couldn't find them anywhere. So I ordered them from Amazon and they came and it was the first package that we had delivered that we accepted into the house in our coronavirus system where, you know, if the packages, when the package is delivered, somebody goes outside, usually Ann or myself, with gloves on. We bring the box onto the porch with gloves on. We cut the box open and hand the bottles inside of the package to the other adult inside the house with Clorox wipes to wipe down the said items for shelving in the pantry.
You guys are like way more advanced than we are. We just walk in and like we have like zero safety precautions going on in this house. I mean,
how is Clarissa with work and stuff? Is she still like full time working overtime? Like, is she?
No, she's just 8 hours a day.
Okay.
It's slow for her though. So she's an admissions and discharge nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So she does all the admissions and discharges. And when all this went down, she was really busy because a lot of people were like getting their family out of their facility, right? Oh, we got to get grandma, you know, like out of that place before she dies. So they discharged a bunch of people. And then a lot of the stuff on the admission side of it could be like, you know, people falling, for example, breaking hips.
Right.
So they go in for hip surgery and then they're in for rehab and all this stuff. Well, with nobody leaving the house and everybody sitting around doing nothing, old people aren't breaking hips. You know, so there's no, and then the elective surgery side of things, like knee surgery.
Oh, they canceled all that. Yeah.
Yeah, like knee surgeries, shoulder surgeries, you know, because somebody has like a torn rotator cuff. Like none of that stuff's going on. And I guess people are suffering at home with those ailments, but a lot of the stuff people would come in for, sometimes they're in for like, I mean, I know there's outpatient rehab and so on, but depending on the person, they might be in for like 3 days, 5 days, you know, for rehab, for the short-term side of it.
Right.
And I'm sure I'm screwing this up, but she'll be yelling at me as she's listening. But few people are doing anything that requires them to be admitted to their facility.
Right.
So she's been really slow, actually. And then...
Okay.
Yeah, and then they do have their long-term residence, but you don't discharge or admit them. They're already there, you know? So... and a lot of them are quarantined, not because they have any COVID-19 or anything.
For their own safety, yeah.
For their own safety, yeah. I wouldn't say they're quarantined, you know, like they do have contact with people and so on, but it's just they're not out and about the way they typically would be.
Right.
You know, so they're just for their own safety. I mean, some of these people are, you know, 80s, 90s. I think there was a guy recently who passed away. This was like 6 months ago, but he was like 104 or something.
Wow.
Nothing to do with coronavirus. I mean, all to do with being 104. Right. But yeah, so she's been slow, you know, but.
Well, that's good. That's a blessing.
Yeah. So what is the beer that you have?
Okay. So I went out today looking for yeast because we've been baking a lot of bread and we're not out of yeast, but we're dangerously close. We have 3 yeast packets left. So, you know, that's almost a week. In a week, we're going to need some yeast.
I wonder, so Clarissa does spent grain bread for me brewing.
Yeah.
I wonder if beer yeast could also be brewer's yeast could be baker's yeast.
Oh, that's interesting. Cause when I looked up bread yeast, I came across wine yeast a lot on Amazon. So I was like, ugh.
Yeah, wine yeast, and there's champagne yeast.
Right, right.
So, which is still different yet.
It's very confusing. So I was like, I'll just go to the store. So I went to the store. The store was sold. Ralph's was sold out of that. But I was like, hey, we're halfway to Wine and Liquor Depot. Let me call them up again and see if I can get a Friday night, you know, 4-pack. And I called Wine and Liquor Depot and they're like, oh, it's, you know, it's 5:45. And I'm like, well, I'm a block away. I'll be right
there.
When
did they close? 6?
They close at 6. And the girl didn't want to help. I was like, I talked to a guy last week. He helped me with that awesome therapist. And she was like, oh, let me give you that guy. So he gave me this epic brewing called Chasing Ghosts. It's double dry hopped, double hazy Indian pale ale. So I'm looking forward to this.
What makes it double hazy? Like extra lactose?
I guess we're going to see.
Lactose sugar? Like it's going to come out in like clumps. So while you're pouring that, let me give you a little story about yeast. So when you think about brewing, the home brew club and everything that somewhat affiliated with. I don't do a whole lot with them, but what we did this one time, they made 5 gallons, 20. What's that? That's 100 gallons of beer, I guess.
Okay.
So they made it. They did 100 gallon brew. The same grain and the same hops. All they changed was the yeast. So what they did was they took this 100 gallons that they boiled, and when it came time to pitch the yeast, what they wound up doing was they divvied up this 100 gallons into 20 different 5-gallon carboys, or maybe 6-gallon carboys, whatever, but 5-gallon batches.
Okay.
and they pitched a different yeast, 20 different yeasts, beer yeasts. So some were Belgian, some were like English ale yeasts, some were California ale yeasts, and you know, there's all these different kind of yeasts.
Right.
And then what they did was, after they were done with that, they kegged them all, and then we had a big barbecue, and they had all the different, the 20 different kegs, and everybody got a chance to taste 20 different beers, and you could taste...
And the only difference was the yeast.
The only difference was the yeast, and you had 20 different beers. It was amazing.
Hmm.
Like, just changing the yeast was a completely different flavor profile. Hops were the same, grains were the same. So it's amazing.
And the yeast, all the yeast is adding for taste is the effervescence, right? It's only the gas that's in it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and there's probably like people out there that know way more about yeast than we do. But no, so they have this thing called like esters, and that's like flavors that come off. They have other byproducts that they put off, and it's just their profile of how they eat and poop the sugar, you know? I mean, more or less.
Because I said that. What did I say? I said today, or the last time we made bread, you know, and called us over to watch the yeast, like, blossoming or whatever in the warm water. And I was like, they're belching in there, all the yeast animals. And Audrey corrected me or said, no, they're pooping in there. It's like, is it gas?
That's what they do.
I guess it's both, right? They don't really have like a GI tract like a human. So belching and pooping is very similar.
Yeah, I mean, essentially they take in oxygen and they poop out CO2.
Yeah.
And then when all of the oxygen is spent, then they take in the sugars and somehow they do their metabolic changes with whatever they do with the sugars, the chemical changes, and they poop out CO2.
Awesome.
So, and alcohol. So how, what, give me a flavor note or two.
Flavor note, it is incredibly citric. It must be based in a citra hop. I couldn't find a list of hops that they're using in here, but oh man, it is almost like an orange juice.
Oh, jeez.
It is so citric, but it is amazingly refreshing. And this is the thing that gets me, like, you say lagers are crisp and refreshing and things like that. And if you give me a citra hop on any day in any IPA, I would drink that all day long on a hot day because I could drink it as it got warmer. You know what I mean? I think
it's like lemonade.
I think part of the love of lagers is the fact that people have a cooler full of ice and they can pull a cold 12-ouncer out of it. You know what I mean? Like, this epic has been waiting for me to finish my martini. It's gotten a little warm in the house with four people in it, you know, kind of building up.
Well, Ted, when you see the mountains, it's cold enough.
Yeah, Epic is from Denver, Colorado, and there is mountains on it, but it is not a Coors, anywhere near to Coors. Like.
Right, but I mean, when you need a gimmick to get your beer had, like, that's when you know it's not good beer. But really quick, I want to give a PSA to everybody out there, and then we could jump into some trailers.
Awesome.
So, you know, everybody's at home a whole lot more these days, and they're all in front of their computers doing Zoom or YouTube and streaming and all kinds of stuff, you know? And
right.
And I was doing some photography stuff, and the fans in my computer kicked up, and it was like this puff of dust came out of my computer when that happened.
Oh, no.
And I was like, that's disgusting. So I took my computer outside and I got some air, some compressed air and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a 27-inch iMac, so there's like a little vent on the back. And then the underneath of it has some venting.
Four fans. I think it has like four fans under there.
It's something like that, yeah. So if you blow in the back, then like the bottom blows out. If you blow in the bottom, the back blows out, you know, and you could go back and forth and clean it out, all the stuff. But what I'm getting at was the vent on the back was super clogged, and I didn't realize, like, I mean, I'm a pretty clean guy, I guess, but I didn't realize, like, You know, and I've cleaned the, I've blown out dust before with my computer. This isn't the first time. It's just, you know, time gets by and you don't think about it.
Right.
So the PSA is, with everybody like running their computers like 20 hours a day, running them hard, the fans are going, you're in your house, there's a lot of dust being kicked up and everything. You know, take a minute, get some compressed air, whether it's a can. I'm not going to say an air compressor because you have moisture and it could be so high you blow off like a diode or something off the logic board. But, you know, obviously turn off your computer. But if you damage it, you know, hey, we're not liable. Go Google how to do it. But what I'm saying, though, is like, go look at how to clean out the, you know, I scrub my keyboard, I clean the screen, you know, I got the computer totally clean inside and out, blew out all the dust and everything. And I mean, it's working marvelous. I updated all my applications and, you know, the computer's running like a tight ship. You know, take care of the computer that's taking care of you, that gets you to see your family and friends.
Yes.
And because you've been running it so long, it's got to be just a filthy beast. Clean off your keyboard and do all that stuff, and you'll be, your computer will be happier for you, and you'll be able to use it long into the future.
Awesome. Love that idea. Yes. I endorse it. But we spent all this time talking about our beers and all this stuff. We didn't talk about our weeks, and we can forego that this week, but I do want to hear about your bike council Zoom meeting.
Oh yeah. We'll talk about that. So there's 30, I think it was like 30 people, 31 people, something like that. I don't even remember exactly, but about 30 people, let's say. And so it's the Santa Barbara Bike Coalition advocacy meeting, and San Luis Obispo County and Ventura County were also a part of it. Everybody was awesome, had some great ideas. They gave some updates on some of the things that are going well in their communities and maybe some of the things that could be improved. And I was the first speaker. So I talked about, there was a number of ideas that I had, and my little bike manifesto thing and all this stuff.
Oh, it was great, by the way. I didn't get back to you, but I was like, oh yeah, I mean, this is great.
I eventually landed on changing the way we talk about bike infrastructure and people and cars and communities and everything, just to make it more like person-centered.
Right.
You know, so... you know, some things might be like, it's not an accident, it's a crash. We're people, we're not pedestrians. Like, it's people walking, it's people trying to cross streets, it's people trying to just get around their communities, you know, and just trying to make it more so like, you know, it's people driving cars, not just cars whipping around town.
Right.
At the center of all this is people. So how is it that like the person driving the car and the person walking and crossing the street and riding their bike and whatever they're doing, we can all get along to understand we all are trying to get to the places we need to go, whether you're on a bus or you're on a bike or in a truck or whatever you're doing, and essentially like make it more human-centered, person-centered, to say that just because you're not in one mode of travel doesn't mean you're any less important.
Right.
You know, everybody equally needs to get to the grocery store if you're driving there or walking there. Either way, the grocery store is important to that person.
Yes.
You know, so that was kind of the gist of what I was getting at. And then other people spoke, and
the common denominator is human.
It's human. Yeah, right. Exactly. We're people, you know? So that's what I talked about mostly, and got a lot of good feedback on that. And then other things were talked about, but more or less, how can we seize the moment of so many fewer cars on the road and getting more like human powered transportation, even if it's just walking like a block to the store or something instead of driving a block to the store. And we've more or less landed on the consensus of marketing.
Really? So,
we had the budget constraints of about $10,000. How are we going to use it? And we were thinking like, well, newspapers want money, so let's advertise. Let's come up with like little billboards and bus corrals that say like I, and then like a picture of a bicycle, you know, like I bike, you know, SB, or I bike, you know, as in Santa Barbara.
Oh yeah.
I bike Lompoc, or maybe some signs, you know, like, you know, thank you for biking today or whatever it is, you know, and because it's a bike coalition. So,
right.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it was really cool. And I mean, a lot of like-minded people. And we had some people from the city of Santa Barbara. We had some people from San Luis Obispo, I think. And, you know, unfortunately, I was like the only one like representing, even though the only one representing Lompoc, but I introduced myself as working for the school district. And then I did our podcast spiel where I said, but I don't represent them and my opinions are my own, you know? And then it was funny though. So I'm sitting there talking and we're all about to hang up. And they said, whoa, one more question. You know, this one guy, you know, and he's like, Jim,
right.
Either you have a podcast or you're a radio DJ. I said, no, I got a podcast, you know, so, you know, I told him about Trailer Junkies podcast and the guy that hosted it and everything, Dr. Dan, he's like, I'll put it in the show notes. So I was cracking him. I'm like,
that's hilarious.
You know, my podcast, well, not my podcast, but I guess since I was in the meeting, but our podcast,
yeah,
is in the show notes of a bike coalition.
That's awesome.
You know, so yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Although I haven't read the show notes yet, so who knows? Maybe it never made the show notes, but whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, like, barf me out. Should we talk about a new movie?
Yes, so Valley Girl, right? Like, it's
for
it's,
sure.
It's refreshing. It's amazing, and I was taken aback. It, you know, they had
totally.
They had your quintessential Valley Girl. They had Alicia Silverstone right in the opening shots of the trailer, and it's not even like her movie, but it was amazing to see her. I don't know if I've told the story before, but we were at a 5-year-old or a 3-year-old's birthday party, pool party. And I had to bring my laptop to the pool party because it was...
Don't drop it in.
It was our fantasy football draft.
Oh, during, so bogus.
During this pool party. And, you know, I'm off in the corner of this pool party and I'm trying not to get it splashed as I pick, you know, all my important picks. And this woman walks up to the fence, you know, where she sees me and she goes, how do I get into this pool party? And I was like, who's this person? Like, what is she asking me? Like, you just keep walking around there. I'm trying to pick, lady, you know, just
barf me out.
And as she walks around, I was like, I think I know that person, you know? And she comes in and I was like, oh my God, that's Alicia Silverstone. And like, of course, like people our age, the Gen Xers, I had a crush on Alicia Silverstone back in the day. But I didn't think I'd be at a pool party with her and her son, you know what I mean?
Like, bag your face.
So Anne, my wife, and Alicia Silverstone are hanging out, like, you know, eating vegan pizza or whatever that Alicia is eating at the time and talking normally. And like, I'm trying to chat with the guys on this fantasy football draft where I'm like distracted. And I was like, I can't believe that I'm trying to do a fantasy football draft and I should be over there trying to talk to one of my, you know, high school crushes of famous people. So it was great to see her in this movie. Great to see her like age gracefully into this role of like, let me tell you a story. You know, she kind of bookends this trailer in this epic Valley Girl story of the 80s, and just it's just so nicely wrapped up in the music of the time and the style of the time, and it just was so reminiscent, like your phrases. You know, it's just like it was very comforting. It was like comfort food.
I would say the thing that I struggle most with this movie is, do I really want to relive high school? It was so horrible and miserable when I was there. Do I need to do it again?
I think that's what I felt when I didn't see mid-90s. You know what I mean? The Jonah Hill movie. I was like,
right.
It had like this kids feel to it, the movie Kids, where it has that dark side of it. And I was like, oh, it's dark. And to me, I I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be some poignant moments within this movie, but I don't know whether it ever feels like it's going to go dark. I feel it's just going to be like, it's like this love letter to the 80s and movies of the 80s. It has like the flash dance. It has like, it has all of these, you know, nuances and nods to these other films that just, I don't know. It's very attractive to me. I don't know if I'm going to see it. It's very interesting that it's going to be streaming. You know, I don't, you know, Orion doesn't hit me as someplace that would benefit from streaming, but I guess someone is paying for this to be streamed somewhere. So we'll see if it's part of that pay to stream or what model it's following.
Well, and it said May 8th, so I'm assuming that's because it's being streamed. Otherwise, they're outrageously optimistic.
No, it said digital. So, I mean, it's definitely getting streamed.
Do we know the streaming service?
I don't know the streaming service. And I don't know that it's going to be in the free streaming service sphere, you know, like the whole idea of the Trolls World Tour, they released, you know, streaming on all platforms and at $20 a pop. And, you know, when you have a family of four, you're looking at more than $20 to go do that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Last weekend, I saw it on our box, on our Amazon, and I was like, let's do this. Let's watch this movie that we would go to the theater to see and spend more money on. We can do it right now in our house for $20. And Anne was like,
totally.
And Anne was like, no, I don't know. There's something better to watch. And we've already paid for all these other things that are streaming. And I was like, oh, really? So that is, I think that is the consensus of most people. I think I'm in the minority of wanting to support something that is new like this, you know, in this new space where they want to do first run at home. But I think first run at home is going to be a tough road to hoe. And this feels like a movie that is trying to do that as well, because obviously if you're going to stream with a streaming service, you're going to mention it in your tag. So when it doesn't mention it, when it says streaming digitally,
true, yeah,
May 8th, it feels like it's going to be a pay to stream. And when the price point is $20, you know, you need to get a bunch of people together to see it. And with COVID-19, you're not getting a bunch of people to see anything.
So when you say pay to stream, you're not talking about like renting through Amazon Prime or something. You're talking about like some other platform or?
No, I'm talking about renting. And I think that's the other thing that's kind of killing the people. There's no way to differentiate renting as the secondary market after a theatrical release. You know, like it said rent for $19.99. And I think that in and of itself, it just turns the stomach of people that are looking at it and saying, well, wait a minute, when I rent movies, it's $3.99. You know what I mean? Like it's because it's
for sure.
$3.99 is because most of the world has already had a chance to see it theatrically out in the theaters. So, you know, they're just trying a different model of first run. So I think they need a different packaging on it. They need a different terminology. And I don't know whether they did that or not. I think it just did $19.99 for a 48-hour rental. And I think they need to have a premiere rental or premium rental or first run rental, something that distinguishes that from the idea of rental, which has just always been a secondary windowing.
The one thing about this, kind of getting away from the rental side of it in that talk, but one of the things I like about teenagers is whenever they say, you know, because you always hear this too, and you have a teenage daughter now,
yes.
So it's like, you have no idea what I'm going through. You have to laugh at it though, because it's like, yeah, I have no idea because I was never a teenager either.
Right, exactly. It was so long ago. It was like 100 years ago, Andre.
And I remember my dad, you know, like I came home drunk one time in high school or like, yeah, it was probably like when I was a senior in high school or something.
Uh-huh.
And what he told me was, which made me more or less like not have the enjoyment of being hanging out with my buddies drinking behind the shed or something. Pretty much he said, no matter what you do or what you plan on doing, just know I've already done it. And I remember the following weekend, it's like, all right, guys, let's go do beer bongs behind the shed or whatever. I don't even know what we were doing, but I was just like, yeah, whatever. I'm going home. This ain't fun. The old man knows what I'm up to. Even though though he doesn't know what I'm up to, he knows what I'm up to.
He doesn't know specifically, but he knows generally.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm getting into. He knows I'm out there doing whatever he was doing at that same age, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I thought when she said that in the show or in the trailer, yeah. I was thinking to myself, like, that is such a teenage line.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, it's just too too low hanging fruit.
I love it when Audrey will come home and she'll tell me, like, oh, you know, so and so, they're like 60, and I know you're old. But they're really old. I'm like, that's not old. Come on.
I know. Sometimes the boys will say that. I'm like, you know, that's 11 years from now. It's not that long from now, you know? Like, oh my God, I'm right there. So Capone.
Capone, yes. Yeah. Speaking of aging gracefully.
What? Yeah. Syphilis and all.
I love this look of Capone, and, like, you know, you and I are both into the mobster movies. And
what do you mean look? Do you mean look as in, like, his physical appearance in the show, or do you mean look as in the take on how they approach it?
Oh, both definitely. I like the prosthetics on Tom Hardy. I like you can tell it's Tom Hardy, but you don't, you know, they still do a lot to mask it, and he can still act through it. So I love that.
Yeah.
And then just, like, you see the glory and you see the guts of something like Goodfellas, and then you have something like The Irishman, where it goes through the heyday all the way to the end, and the end is kind of this third act of that a lot of people were talking about cutting out of it. But it really takes the core of The Irishman, and it's like, let's deal with just that geriatric part, just that last chapter, and make the whole movie about that. You know what I mean? You know, instead of having people not suffer, but enjoy the first part of the movie, we all have seen The Untouchables, and we've all seen other Capone movies. So we know the legend and the story of him.
People get the gist,
yeah.
Right? They know he was,
yeah,
he was doing drive-bys with Tommy guns and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But just the idea of him in his, like, robe with a Tommy gun and like in the grips of dementia, you know, it is this new romance of a character that we all know and kind of have glorified through mob movies. You know, it's so funny because Audrey, you know, she's 14 years old, and she'll come to us and she'll be like, so what do you think it takes to be a mob wife? And I was like, I don't know. And are they too young to see Goodfellas? Because I think that'll scare Audrey straight. And she goes, no way. She said, no, the kids can't see Goodfellas.
That's so funny.
And I was like, Karen Hill will set you straight if you think that being a mob wife is glorifying, you know what I mean? Like, yes, there are glorified moments, you know, of that thing, but it is an intricate web you weave when you deal with the mob. So I, you know, it is a romanticized thing, and I'm interested to see this take of it. I don't think I've seen this before.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people know about his early life in the mobster side of things, and then even watching other shows like Boardwalk Empire and so on that has the Al Capone character. But not many people know that he spent time in Alcatraz.
Yeah.
And then he died of syphilis in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that he died of syphilis, and I knew he had been to Alcatraz, but I did not understand that there was any amount of time for something like this to transpire. So I don't know whether there's some, you know, poetic license that's given here, or whether, you know, some fictitious events around some possibilities, but it is an interesting space and time to place, you know, a story.
Throughout this whole thing, he's smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
Have you had any of those cigars I gave you?
I've had one cigar, yes. I've only had one, though. So I am definitely not doing the huge box of cigars justice. I did talk to my priest this past week, Holy Week. I've been working on the website, and another friend of mine in the Men's Fellowship, he's been working hard videotaping the masses to put them up on the website and put them up on all our socials. And we kind of use this month. It's been quite a launch, a month to launch a website and to really launch a social presence of our church. So, you know, after this, the priest was texting me and he was saying, like, we should definitely get together for a barbecue. And I was like, I'll bring the cigars. and I was like, they're straight from Cuba from my podcast partner. You know?
Yeah, enjoy them. Enjoy them. Because I had a couple, man. I can't handle them. I get like,
I had one and it was amazing, but it, like you said, it will set you back. And it's so funny because like Anne is like so concerned about like my lung capacity and stuff like that. Like, because I'm on the CPAP, she's like, you're already on a CPAP. You can't be smoking all the time. You know what I mean? She's like, with COVID-19.
What cigar did you have? Do you know?
It was out of that big bundle at the bottom.
Oh, that was a Partega.
A Partega. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a smaller, skinnier one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I didn't want to go crazy. Those ones in the top, like I'm gonna take out that top layer and leave that at home when I go to the barbecue at church.
Those Partegas, those are probably about, if I had to guess, they're pushing about 30 years old.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, those are definitely from like the early 90s.
Oh, they were still good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I took care of them in the humidor.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
So yeah, I couldn't handle them though, man. It's like, I remember one time, I think I told you the story, maybe I didn't, but I'll tell it again. Clarissa went to bed and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have one of those cigars. I sat in the backyard. I got a book. I had I had my little light on the book. I'm sitting in the backyard in the dark. It was like a really warm evening. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful out. And I'm reading the book and I'm puffing away at this cigar. And I'm like, oh, wow, this tastes like crap, you know? And I'm puffing away at it. Next thing you know, the world is spinning. And I'm not inhaling. This is just the nicotine through that I'm ingesting through like the membrane in my mouth, you know? And
Right.
So I kind of like get my knees up to my head and I just kind of sit in this like fetal ball position. And I said, when the world stops, I'm going to go in the house. Because I was afraid if I stood up, I was going to vomit or something.
Or fall and knock yourself out.
Yeah,
it's too much.
I think the idea of cigars is a lot more pleasurable than the actual act of smoking a cigar.
Right.
But so The Sopranos, have you ever seen The Sopranos?
I did watch The Sopranos. I did not watch all seasons of The Sopranos. So, you know, I watched a few seasons of The Sopranos and per usual, my 3 or 4 seasons, I think I watched, and that was it.
I never saw it.
You didn't see it?
No, I'm thinking because HBO's free right now. It's free on HBO. I'm thinking about getting into it.
Yeah, do it. Do it for a couple seasons. You know, it's worth, you know, like anything, it has trick ponies and it does certain tropes. It has some key moments that it brings up, and it kind of uses the mob mentality in this space, and it kind of gives a vulnerability to it that is really refreshing in the beginning.
Because he goes to see a therapist or something every week or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just him coming to terms with the fact that he likes doing this thing that is seen as a weakness to his community and his mob family and his real family, you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
So it is this thing of enjoying something that is like the ultimate taboo for someone whose life is all about society's taboos. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, when you live by a separate code of conduct and bravado, and then you take pleasure in something that is anti that, then, you know, then you've set up this trope of like new establishment, you know, your own personal establishment, you know? That's what's interesting. I think it kind of falls into a typical dramedy. I think Rescue Me was another one that kind of followed that same thing where, you know, after four seasons, there is a drama that turns into melodrama, and then it's not as interesting because once something's melodramatic, everything is the same. It's all mush. It's all gray, you know?
No, I know exactly. And I want to touch on that a little bit later, but Capone, to finish up. No, but I do want to get to The Irishman.
Yeah.
So Capone to finish up. I do want to watch it, and I think Capone is going to be something along the lines of The Irishman. When I said when The Irishman came out, we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to watch it with Uncle Bud.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and Uncle Bud, like, he knew the story of all the guys before the movie talked about the story of all the guys, you know. And
but that was more contemporary. The Irishman was more contemporary.
That well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, because that was around in the 60s and 70s. When my uncle was a Teamster and, you know, he was doing all the stuff along the lines of the Jimmy Hoffa Teamsters, and he was a city worker in Chicago and all that kind of stuff. So where when you look at Capone, I mean, you're looking more at the 20s and 30s, not so much the 60s and 70s. It was a very different mob at that point.
No, it is. Just before anyone's time. So it's like, it is interesting.
Exactly.
Do you think some of that stuff is like, it's gotta be his dementia cinemified, you know? It's like when he has the alligator between his legs and he's walking through the bodies of whatever. It's like, that's in his mind, right? That's gotta be a...
If I had to guess, I mean, obviously it's not telling you any of the story of what's going on, but when you see these odd scenes, yeah, I can only assume that's what it was. Like, whatever he's hallucinating or believing that's happening is what, I mean, heck, that's his reality.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, so. All right, so Capone, I'm probably going to watch this one. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean...
How do you not? It looks awesome.
Did I miss where it's going to be showed?
Yeah, I didn't see that either, so...
I tried to scrub through the end of it a couple times. I didn't see where it was. I don't know if they're doing, like, a long lead and kind of just, like, we won't put a date... You know, this would be very interesting. If now theatrical releases are just kind of trailers that are put out there to kind of get the temperature of the... no pun intended, to take the temperature of the audience... You know, when we get back into theaters, we'll figure out how we're going to roll these things out, because if anything was a huge blockbuster, they pushed it off to next year, 2021 summer. And if it's not, they've pushed it off to the fall. Even some major blockbusters, they push off to the fall. So you really have to kind of wait for a major blockbuster to be released in the fall and to kind of recalibrate how comfortable audiences are coming back into the theater to watch movies sitting three seats away from people they don't know, and hoping that the teenager that is working at the movie theater has sprayed enough Lysol in between screenings that it's killed some virus, or if you're COVID-19 positive and you're already discharged and you don't fear, you know, retransmission, then you're going to the theaters. You know, I don't understand how we're gonna motivate, how the wheels of our economy are gonna start rolling again, especially in the space of theatrical entertainment. So I love this idea that I feel like Capone's gonna be in the theater. I don't know. They don't even know. They don't even pretend to understand where they're gonna be placed. So they just put a trailer out and they'll gauge the engagement, you know, after they, you know, see how many hits they get on YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, let's ruminate on that for a moment.
Yeah.
So when we think about the theater, and I've thought about this now for, I don't know, the past 2 or 3 weeks, watching trailers and things. And every time I watch a movie trailer, I'm thinking, wow, this is a cool trailer. What is the future of the movie industry? At least, I mean, 10 years out, okay, people, their memories change and, you know, they get back to the theater and, like, it's just what it's always been, let's say.
Right.
1 year out, 2 years out, I mean, what does that look like with regard to, yeah, like you said, I mean, you pay the ticket, you're in line. When you look at the number of people and people behind you sneezing and coughing and people would lose their minds if that were to happen, right? But when does it change back to where it's okay to go to the movie theater and, like, the greasy floors and the sticky railings and, you know, everybody's in the toilets, you know? And I mean, like, when you think about it, the movie theaters are a cesspool of disease.
Well, right? You know, like, yeah, totally. And Anne and I are both kind of struggling with our masks. And, you know, Anne's like, I can't keep it from fogging up my glasses. And I'm like, I think.
And how do you eat popcorn with a mask?
I can't even open my phone with my mask on. You know, I got mask and gloves and my phone's like completely useless.
Masking.
You know, it's looking for Face
ID.
And
you're in a room by yourself.
It's a Face ID. Exactly.
Right.
You know, like if I have my CPAP mask on in the middle of the night, it won't open my phone. If I have my mask on and I'm out in public and it won't open my phone.
You're all
Apple, please figure out how to, you know, recognize me just with my eyes and my forehead. We got to figure this out.
That's right.
But yeah, so I went to Tolkien with Anne, and I went to Tolkien when it came out. And on the way there, I had like a tickle in my throat. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot sit through a movie where I'm the one coughing, disrupting everyone, you know? So I got stopped it. I got some cough drops because I was self-conscious about it. And I was just downing cough drops. But if there's somebody that's COVID positive and they're downing cough drops and they're touching everything, like, we're not going to know, you know?
Oh, and sneezing, and you see the spray come across the screen, you know? And
isn't that the opening scene of Outbreak? I mean, the guy was in a movie theater when his Outbreak stuff was pulled into the ducts, you know? So
yeah,
I think we're in for a world of masks and inoculation cards, you know? So we'll see how that goes. But I think masks are in our future. I was walking, you know, doing my travels around today. I've seen a lot of masks, and I was wearing a mask, and I've just kind of given into it. I'm like, I think I figured out how to keep my glasses from fogging. I don't know what it is.
So what I see happening is, in about a year, you're going to have this outbreak. Well, outbreak's probably a bad word to use, but you're going to have this
relapse
increase in broken hips, broken legs, fractured arms and stuff, because people are going to be falling downstairs everywhere because no one's going to want to hold on to the railings. Right? So it's like
that thing.
Easier to wash hands, but no one's going to want to wash hands, so they won't grab the railing, and instead they'll trip and fall down the stairs, and like you'd have this uptick in like fractures and stuff taking place. I'm calling it now. All right, Artemis Fowl. Let's jump Artemis ahead Fowl. Before we go down some other crazy rabbit hole.
Of course. We'll wrap it up with Artemis Fowl. So, you know, I've kind of run the gamut this week on how we pick the movies. Obviously, we have the first one, Valley Girl, where it says streaming for sure, but we don't know where. It's kind of ambiguous where it's streaming.
For sure.
And then Capone, where we don't know if it's streaming, if it's theatrical. It's completely ambiguous. It doesn't know.
This one, we know exactly where it's coming.
This one, we know exactly where it's going to be.
Pinpoint.
And we also know the price we're going to pay for it.
It's already been paid.
$0, 0 cents, because it's built into what we've bought for 3 years. You and I bought our Disney Plus package.
What is it, $4 a month or something? Or
it's $4 a month. I think $3.82 of a month.
Something like that.
Of course,
yeah.
I will disclaimer that I don't know anything about the decision to make this a streaming product. It was definitely 100% going to be a theatrical product.
Oh, this was going to be, but I think you're right about that. They're just looking at it like there's no way.
They pulled it. And of all the things that they delayed Mulan into the fall. They delayed some stuff, I think, into next year. I think they delayed Black Widow indefinitely. You know, I think it's also going to be in the fall, but it's not really framed up yet. This one, they just said, we're going to put it in streaming. And I don't know how this works. You know, it's like, it's interesting. It's an interesting idea. It is a loved book. You know, it is a great adaptation. It looks really cool. You know, it looks like they spent a lot of money on it. So this is one of those things that's interesting. How do you do the math on something like this? How do you take that? Do you count it as a write down? Do you write it into the cost of doing business in Disney Plus? plus. It's very interesting when you talk about the economics of what's going on now. You know what I mean? It's very easy to say Trolls, we released Trolls. We're going to do it as an experiment. We're going to see how many $20 we can extract from our audience at a time. And then this one is like, we're going to throw it at our audience, and then we're going to have internal metrics that not even me as an internal Disney person will have access to the numbers out of Disney Plus, nor do I want them, because, you know, who knows what me with two of these epic brewing beers would say on a podcast, but I would never say anything. But it is a treat. It is a bonus. It is something that you would have waited to see in this format, and now we don't have to wait. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, do you see anything more than just the fact that it is 100% something you'd watch? Like, I don't know.
Yes, I agree with you in that it was going to come out in the theater, and now they pulled it back into the streaming fray. Do you think that they're doing it? They're picking and choosing certain movies. Like you said, some Black Widow is held indefinitely out into maybe the fall or whatever to be theatrically released, as opposed to coming into streaming. And again, it goes back to what we were saying. So what? Okay, the fall comes up. I don't see people running to the theater come, you know, September,
yeah,
October, November even. You know, I just think people are going to be way cautious.
I really see the bars and gyms. You know, the gym rats and bar flies are going to be the canaries in the coal mine. They're going to be the ones running back to doing these things that they used to do.
Yeah.
And it's these two ends of the spectrum.
They're going to make it the W's. The W recovery, right?
Exactly.
Right?
But I think there's so much good content out in the streaming space that the cinephiles don't have to go to the movie theater. You know, there's no one other than Cineplex Odeon's grandchildren that care about whether something's released theatrically over, you know, streaming service. If the quality of the content is there, I don't think it matters where it's shown. Your house is set up amazing. My bedroom is better than my living room. You know what I mean? Like, we have these huge screens.
Right.
We have great sound systems. We don't necessarily need the cumbersomeness of the theatrical experience.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the theatrical experience, like, not everybody has massive screens and not everybody has amazing sound systems. And sure, I would agree that if you look at an IMAX, for example, I mean, those screens are enormous and the sound is like oftentimes way too loud. But when you stop and think about the majority of movies, you know, some, I don't know, stupid nonsense comedy that doesn't necessarily need to be had on the silver screen. The only reason it is so teenagers can get out of the house away from their parents to go watch it. So when you think about it in those terms, I mean, I think that the home viewing experience, at least within the next year time frame, is going to dominate the movie going experience for no other reason than just what we were talking about. Like, you don't want to go to the movie and be sneezed on and coughed on and the sticky railings and the gross floors and, you know, I hope the kid behind the counter before he grabs my milk duds washed his hands.
Or you'll be the crazy people like Ed and I, where we got the Clorox wipes and gloves and masks, where we're like, we have the Clorox wipe and we take our $20 bill out of our wallet with the Clorox wipe and hand it to the cashier.
That's
and then
it,
we receive the raisinettes back with our Clorox and we wipe down the box dutifully.
You're washing down each coin, like, to include the pennies. Like, you spend so much time on washing a penny that, like, you've reduced your hourly rate to, like, $2 an hour.
Yes, I think I would tip the change back to those guys. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
So Artemis Fowl, I'm excited to see it. I'm happy to see it. I love the idea of watching it on Disney Plus.
So this is a movie though, right? It's not a series.
It's a movie, you know, yes.
Yeah,
it was definitely, it had a release date. They pulled it from the schedule. They could have pushed it off to the fall. They could have pushed it, you know, compressed it in this space. But, you know, we've talked about this before. Movie slates and theatrical releases are set up years in advance, you know.
When was the release date? Do you know that?
I don't know the original release date. I think it was in the summertime. We'll definitely put it in the show notes since you mentioned it. But it is another great experiment on the other end of the spectrum from Trolls, where you could try to extract this idea of like, how many $20 hits can we get out of a movie like this? Or how can we put something in and have it as part of a reason to stretch into this space? And I think, you know, as far as the dig on Disney Plus is that it doesn't have new content. It doesn't have content for adults. So this is still something that's kid-centric, but I think it reaches into that adult quadrant or the adult couple of quadrants when we talk about the four quadrants of filmmaking and the four quadrants of the space.
Exactly.
So it kind of stretches that Disney Plus audience to say, hey, we're valuable to all four quadrants.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to segue into what we're watching.
Awesome.
But before I say that, though, is I think if the boys were older, I think this would be a fun one to watch as a family. It just looks a little bit too intense, a little bit too scary. And yes. I think, you know, a 5 and a 7-year-old would just be freaked out. And segueing into what we're watching, what I'll jump right into, if I can,
please,
is Onward. So okay. We watched Onward this week, and Onward was pretty light. You know, there were a few intense moments, but even with that, it's like these troll kind of, I don't know, blue
troll brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. Troll blue brothers. And, you know, you get like dragons and the dragon. I mean, you watched, I'm assuming?
A number of times. I've seen it 4 times.
Oh, okay. So the dragon has like the funny face from the side of the school.
They're the Blues Brothers. They're on a mission from God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you know, and we really enjoyed it. We had a lot of great laughs, and even I was all misty eyed on a few scenes and so on. But it was like intense on a few things, you know, and
yeah.
And we also watched Dolphin Reef.
Uh-huh. Oh, good.
Which, by the way, you didn't tell me was from 2018.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah. So
they package it up so nicely. I enjoyed it. 2020.
Yeah. The 2021 is the making of Dolphin Reef, but the Natalie Portman one was from 2018. Mm. But the scene there where the one whale and the mother and the calf.
Yeah, Fluke and the mom. Yeah.
Yeah, they were in trouble from the
orcas or something, right?
The orcas. And by slapping the fins, all the males came to the rescue kind of a thing. And it was really cool. And then there was a shark one that was like that. And then there was another one where the one dolphin was getting like molested by a bunch of other dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
Then the whole pod came to the rescue and stuff. And those scenes were like really intense for like a 5 and a 7-year-old. Like, oh, my God, this dolphin's in trouble. And then here they come to the rescue. The way they kind of played it out and everything was amazing. And then when the turtle and the dolphin were lost in the cavern.
Oh, I saw that. I immediately thought of you guys.
Yeah, like the boys are looking at like, oh, please don't die. Please don't die, little one, you know? And so, but what I'm getting at is, you know, looking at Artemis Fowl and these other things we were watching this week, that there's a lot of intense moments in things that aren't necessarily intended to be, you know, it's just everyday life kind of for some animals, but they are intense.
Yeah.
Life is intense. And getting kids used to seeing these intense moments is pretty dramatic. And you have to like get them under the blanket and like you hold them and they watch and they bury their head and they watch and they peek and they bury their head, they peek and they watch, you know, and it's like, wow, this is pretty like intense for someone who is not really experiencing intense things.
Yeah. And, you know, even Bryce, like, you know, you and I have said, like, he's kind of a sensitive soul and he has that.
Oh, for sure.
Same
yeah.
Moments. And but he's older. So he even understands that about himself. So he'll be like, I'll leave the room and you just call me back when this is over. You know, like he's so nonchalant about it. and to the point now where he like, he'll hang out thinking it's going to be over in a second or two. And it'll just be like, all right, just go and we'll call you back when it's over. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't know whether he should stick it out or whether we should just like let him go and come back. Cause you never know how long those intense moments are going to last, you know, as a first time viewer.
That's right.
But we were watching a lot of, rewatching a lot of stuff that Bryce was watching for the first time with this new, and it's so funny because I think he's seen these things before, but he saw them at such a younger age that he wasn't even engaging with it in this way. So I think he's aged into this sensitivity. You know, like he was so far removed because we just started watching the Narnia ones because.
Oh, yeah.
So I think Dawn Treader is something that's on HBO only or one of the new streamers that we have. So we actually watched them backwards. We watched Dawn Treader, then Prince Caspian, and now we're watching Lion, Witch, and the Road Wardrobe. But there were definitely moments in Prince Caspian where Bryce had seen it before and he had remembered some of the parts, but he just didn't remember the intensity of those parts, which was interesting.
Yeah, and then we finished Lego Masters. So
awesome.
That was really well done. I mean, it's reality TV, but it's reality TV done in a different way. So then we also watched a lot of the BTS on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
So I went and looked up some of the people that were on there. And then you kind of learn that, like, I mean, these people are, I mean, they're, let's face it, they're Lego masters, right? So a lot of where all these people came from, I mean, they're conventioner type people. They're all in that community.
Right.
And they have, you know, they're YouTubers. They do Legos, Lego on YouTube, and they build. They go to these different conventions, these different cons, as it were.
Right.
So when you watch it that way, it's not surprising that they landed on the show. And the things they talked about, like with regard to the show, it was really cool about, like, you know, they had these like 10-hour builds, 20-hour builds, 15-hour builds, and so on. And people were asking questions like, did you really go 15 hours? You know, and they said, well, we're under like contract. We can't talk about these things, like how that all played out. But just know that labor laws won't allow people to not have to go to the bathroom. You know, so or eat, you right, know what right, I mean? Right. So even though it's a 20-hour build, it's like it might be a 20-hour build, but within that 20 hours is bathroom breaks and
all the legally responsible breaks.
Exactly. And all I thought was, man, the craft service guy must have been the hero on the show, you know, like just catering in so much food, you know. But we started Ozark on Netflix.
Oh, good.
So have you seen that?
I saw the first season and I actually started the second season this week now that Devs is over. But yeah,
We're two episodes in.
You're two episodes in? What has happened so far?
He just left Chicago and they're now getting established in Missouri in the Ozarks.
So those first two episodes, they're shocking. Are they not?
When they kill off everybody in the first episode?
That's what I'm saying.
You're like, where's the show going? They just killed off like half the cast.
When they throw the boyfriend out the window, I was like, oh my God. That was like such a defining defining moment of the first season that I was just like, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, but you're right, though. I mean, it's like the first episode, you're like, where does it go from here? They just killed everybody, you know? So, yeah, we just started Ozark, Onward, Lego Masters, Dolphin Reef. And I rented, this is kind of an older one from 2010, maybe 2013. I'm not really sure, but it was a ESPN 30 for 30.
Oh, yeah.
Slaying the Badger. So again, my, you know, I'm at home not watching any bicycle racing. So it was Greg LeMond and his rivalry and defeat of 5-time Tour de France winner Bernard Hinault.
Uh-huh.
So that was a lot of fun. And then we also watched I talked last week about Lance Armstrong and his buddies doing bicycle racing. So they did the Paris-Roubaix this week, and I was wrong on all accounts.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't choose any of the ones I talked. So they chose 2005 and 94. Yeah, 94 and 2005 they chose. And I thought they were going to pick some other years, but yeah, whatever. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, but that was a lot of fun. So then the last thing was the Tour de Quarantine, which this guy, Brad Sonner, he does like bicycle racing, like color commentary, I guess.
Uh-huh,
And I mean, it is brilliant. So he must live in Pittsburgh, I'm assuming, because all these people are riding bikes in Pittsburgh and they're just like putzing along on like a bike path. And he's sitting there and he's calling them as if it's a race. And he throws in like all the Tour de France, like sound effects, you know, the cars beeping, the helicopter noises and stuff. And anybody, I mean, just go to YouTube, Tour de Quarantine. And I mean, they're like 2 minutes each. I mean, they're like really fast.
I love it. I love it. It's super short.
Yeah, they're super short. And it is just pure comedy. My favorite was stage 7. He starts off the stage, you know, like as color commentators want to do, and he's like, the million-dollar question on everybody's mind, when is it too early to start drinking? And it's one of those things where it's like, I just was laughing so hard because that is the question. Sometimes it's like 2 o'clock and I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, is now okay? Like, I don't know. There's beer in the fridge. I got nothing else to do. I'm kind of bored.
That's awesome.
So you know what I've been doing? I figured, okay, if I'm doing some things, I pound beers too fast. Uh-huh. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go sit out in front. And I'm going to sit on the bench. I'm going to watch people riding by, walking by, because like people are out like crazy, right? People are riding bikes, walking dogs. I'm going to sit on the front porch on my little bench that I got out there. I got my book. I'm going to read my book. I'm going to sip on a beer.
Uh-huh.
So this is like 3 o'clock. Clarissa rolls up at 5:30. What? I totally put a nipple on this beer. I mean, I totally nursed it. So I had a beer and I was like, wow, she rolls up at 5:30 and I've been reading my book for 2.5 hours and I'm thinking, what have the boys been up to?
That's what I was thinking exactly.
I'm like, what are you guys doing? And Timmy, they're sitting. I mean, I don't know how I raise these children. They're sitting on the sofa. Timmy is reading Star Wars books to Mikey. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are amazing.
Angels. Angels.
Somehow I'm raising you properly. You're choosing to read. You know, like, or they see me coming, quick, he's coming in. Pretend like you're
reading. Put the matches away. Daddy's coming.
Put the matches away. But yeah, anyway, with all that, oh, and a quick story about 3 seasons.
Okay.
So my mom texts me, I got to tell you about this show we're watching. You got to see it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're FaceTiming, whatever, you know, and I said, Mom, what's the show? Oh, Homeland. I said, oh, on Showtime, right? I said, yeah, we saw it. I said, there's 3 seasons, right? She goes,
7.
Oh, no, there's 8 seasons. I said, 8 seasons? I said, oh, we got done with the 3rd season. I thought it was over at that point. We just quit, yeah. You know? And she's like, oh, no.
No, they killed Brody. When they killed Brody, I'm out, dude. Come on.
Oh, that was 2.
Yeah, forget it.
And then we did, and then it was like 3.
No, I did have a season 3. I was like, Oh, we're not bringing Brody back? Brody's really swinging from the fucking crane?
The crane, right. Right. So I was like, all right, we'll give it one more season. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. You know, so we cut ties. And my mom's like in season four now. She's like, it's amazing. I'm like, there's three sides to a cave. Season one side, season two side, season three sides, and you're out of there. You know, I mean, it was, but I just, when she was telling me how, like, you know, we were talking about the seasons. Oh my God. It was like one of those, it was one of those defining moments of Trailer Junkies podcast, man. I mean, it was brilliant.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway, so you talked a little bit about, like, you've seen Onward four times now. What else you guys been doing?
Yeah, so we've seen Onward a bunch on Disney Plus. And I said we watched Narnia backwards, and we're in the middle.
Right, of yeah. And you also watched the Dolphin Reef, which you thought was recent, but instead is 2018.
Right.
But you saw the elephants too, though.
Right. We watched it back to back, and that was fun.
Yeah, that's next on our list.
Definitely interesting storytelling, both of this. But on Sunday, maybe on Easter Sunday, as an early dinner, we actually saw, yesterday was on, that's that the Beatles inspired one-man show that became this movie, was on HBO.
Okay.
And
really quick, let me interrupt you for a second. We did watch McMillions.
Oh,
well.
You did. You watched the whole thing?
Speaking of HBO, yeah. No, we have one episode. We have the sixth episode left. So we've seen the first five.
So what do you think? What do you think about the FBI agent?
Oh, that guy is big character, man. I mean, charisma. He is my favorite.
He makes the whole show. And he does.
Oh, that guy's awesome.
He does very, very little in his office, like in his real life, like in the real life of who he is. Like, he doesn't do much. But like I told you, when Audrey was really taken aback by their reenactments, I was like, this is old school trope, you know, old school reality trope.
Right.
But it works
right.
So perfectly with that character. When he talks about that gold suit, like, come
the
on.
The gold suit, yeah.
It's like, it's larger than life, you know, so.
He's in his office, or he's in a office.
Right.
Not his office, but he's in a office that's extremely sterile.
Oh, yeah.
And I love how, like, there's nothing in there but a little desk placard that has his name on it. You know, it's like, really, dude, this is your office? There's nothing in here, right. You know? And he's just in there talking about it so matter of fact.
Right.
And like, he sees the comedy in it.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that guy, his personality is bigger than life. And they're on this wire, and they're just sitting on this wire for like days or weeks or whatever. And it's like so boring. And you know, this guy is sitting in a van or in a room or something, just listening to nothing,
right,
for like days on end, you know. And it's like, I mean, the comedy that just must have spewed from this guy must have been tremendous, because it's the only thing you could have to get through it.
Yeah.
Right?
And I loved, like, after the fact, the station chief, who obviously is retired, you know, shooting the interview from his house, you know, and he's oh, that guy, you know, like, in retrospect, he's like, he was a headache during the time, but I could totally understand where he's coming from and what he was doing at the time. And I grant him his leniency on what he was doing, but at the time, I'm sure I was infuriated by it, you know.
Oh man, 100%. Like, that's the kind of guy, like, he's so, like, he doesn't know what he didn't know.
and he tackled that drunk dude on the beach.
Oh, that was
on
awesome.
Camera
that was
he awesome. Got, they got it on camera.
Well, and what's so funny is, it's like, yeah, we're here to like interview you because you're one of the $1 million winners, and some drunk guy takes the check that's fake
check,
and this guy's like fresh out of Quantico, Virginia, right? So you know he's like fit, like he just got done running like, you know, like 4 minute miles in training, yeah, or something, yeah. And he's like, oh hell no, and he's like. out after him.
Right.
And you know, the guy's like, how is the camera director so in shape to chase this guy down and tackle him on the beach? I mean, that was, yeah, that was
well, so
hilarious.
Definitely put a pin in this, because next week you'll come back after watching the final episode, and the final episode just is such a, it's such a twist to the whole thing.
Is it a letdown or?
No, it is a lift, okay. And a twist, and it is like a gut punch, but the nicest one you could ever take.
Oh, I can't wait.
Everyone talks about Tiger King, Tiger King, Tiger King, and I...
Yeah, we're not there yet. We haven't seen it. I don't know.
And I tried to watch a couple episodes, and I get it. If you're into like this reality world space of Housewives of Orange County, or that, you know, the whole Bravo set. And I used to work at Bravo, so I can say that there's a whole society that's wrapped up in that. And yes, it's intriguing and it's fun to poke fun at and to look at. But there's something, you know, like destructive about that. And there's something about McMillions where it just like, it feels like it's going to be a letdown. You know, there's this mob mentality. There's these couple of characters in there that are very similar to that Tiger King space, but there's an uplifting thing. And we'll talk about it next week after you've seen the final episode, but the final episode really just likes, it does these things in the last 10 minutes of the final episode that just, it blows your mind. So I can't wait for you to experience that.
Oh, and then, man, this is like, I think I watched more TV this past week than we have, you know. So I only like half watched. I was dipping in my head while I was cooking dinner, and like where the kitchen is to where the TV is, there's like these archways, right. So I could see through across, and I can kind of, you know, I kind of got the gist of what was going on. But Detective Pikachu.
Oh, I love that movie. I saw that movie this week as well.
Oh, did you?
I did. And my whole family had seen it, and I was like, I haven't seen that. They're like, oh, let's watch it, Daddy. And I was like, all right, I'll watch it. And I was really, really into it. I enjoyed that wholeheartedly.
All right, cool. So I like half watched it, and what I saw wasn't bad. I think I missed a lot of the exposition and what was going on throughout the yeah. story. I was more peeking in with like, is this appropriate kind of stuff rather than am I into this? But you know, hey, maybe if the boys watch it again, I'll sit in and I'll watch it. But yeah, so Detective Pikachu. So, I mean, it was, you know, Timmy enjoyed it. And Mikey was, he was fearful of some scenes.
Oh, okay.
So, but he would leave and then he would come back. And then Timmy would be like, I got you, Mikey. Just sit here. I'll protect you.
Nice.
And Timmy was sitting, he'd put his arm around his brother and Mikey would get scared. He'd run out, you know, it was really cute, you know, but, and then like you could tell his curiosity, cause then he'd peek back around the corner. And he'd come back, and it was pretty funny, but
that's awesome.
So yeah, you watched Detective Pikachu. I mean, I know I keep cutting you off and I apologize for that, but you watched a bunch of stuff.
I watched a bunch of stuff
this week then, and I promise that's the last I've seen.
Okay, no worries. If you do it again, it's fine. So we watched yesterday in the middle of Easter Sunday, and I was drinking.
That's the Beatles.
That's
one,
the Beatles,
right?
One. The Beatles are forgotten by society and by the world at large, except for one singer-songwriter who knows most of the songs of the Beatles and, you know, takes them as his own and kind of releases them into his...
Wait, you're saying people forgot about the Beatles?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've heard of this.
Yeah, the world doesn't know who the Beatles is. And basically, he basically just, every time he mentions something, it's a cool little trick that they use, and they do it in the trailer too. When he says Beatles, and the people are like, who are the Beatles? They jump cut to him searching on the internet. And whenever he searches on the internet, he doesn't find what it is. So there's a few other things that are missing, like Coke. There's only Pepsi. And he's like, Mom, I'd really want a Coke instead. And she's like, what's Coke? You know, and he looks up Coke and it comes up as cocaine. And, you know, there's no such thing as Coca-Cola. So it's interesting that they do that. But it is such a love story to the Beatles. And Bryce was so kind of into that whole idea of these songs. Like, he was just taken by these songs.
What year does the movie take place?
It's contemporary. I think it's, you know, it's now. So it's a couple of years ago, I think, was when the movie came out.
No, not when it came out, but when does it take place, though? I mean,
I think it takes place in, like, contemporary. I think it's like,
well, how do people not know about the Beatles?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's a worldwide blackout, and during the worldwide blackout, a handful of commonplace things like the Beatles, Coke, and Harry Potter vanish from the collective consciousness.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, it is a fictitious film.
There's too much paraphernalia.
No, but it's all gone. It's all gone. It's all gone from the zeitgeist. But it's kind of very moving because, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but
yeah, that's fine.
It is an incredibly evocative movie.
What'd you watch it on?
I watched it on HBO and then just streaming. And then I said, oh, since everybody's so into this movie, let's watch Across the Universe. And Across the Universe is the Julie Taymor film that uses the Beatles songs to kind of tell its story of the Vietnam War. So the British and American story of the Vietnam War. So there's a great, I think it's a great movie. We watched that movie later in the evening, into the evening. I kept drinking, and it was an amazing movie as well. And we too rented that one. And I was like, it's kind of amazing that we're renting a movie. You know, when we have all of this free streaming and we turn down streaming trolls for $20, but I kind of had to sneak off to myself and say, oh, I rented it over here on the other computer. And then I ran over to the room, to the living room, and we played it over there. So the kids like that. But it's so funny, like earlier today, you know, it's a week after we've watched these movies, I'm like, Bryce, what are you listening to over there? You know, because he's got his little iPhone working while he's doing his homework. And he's like, I'm listening to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts. And he's listening to like the Beatles' greatest hits on Tidal or something, on one of the music on YouTube or whatever it was. And I was like, oh man, he really got into the Beatles with all of this stuff. So
that's so funny.
So he is quite, you know, like he was into Queen when Queen was kind of having their thing. And
right.
And he's very musical, and he gets into these great classic rock musical spaces, and it's amazing. So I can't wait for him to grow up and keep playing the guitar. So
do you subscribe to HBO? Is that what it is? Or
oh no, it's this free HBO thing.
Oh, okay.
So I think you could find it if you saw Pikachu. It's the same place that we saw yesterday, was where we saw Pikachu.
Yeah, I mean, we just put the HBO channel on our Roku.
Yeah, there you go. And I think for us, it was like Amazon through the Amazon Fire box that we have. It's a special hashtag at home, and they've packaged all the free things that you could get through Amazon and through these other people that are giving you the free months, and they kind of just package it up and served it up to us. So yeah, so watch that. Nice. Watched a lot of other things, but those are the core things, and just it's a great family viewing experience to try to find things that are for the family. Oh, the last thing I'll say is this Disney sing-along that was last night on ABC, and everyone can watch it on Hulu now for streaming, but it was an amazing production done in quarantine. So they had these dancing, singing numbers with Christina Aguilera and Ariana Grande and Beyonce and like Juliana Huffs and like all of these amazing stars, and the whole cast of High School Musical, the original, and High School Musical, the musical, the series, doing a ensemble performance directed by Kenny Ortega. And it was just amazing to see all these people come together. Ryan Seacrest hosted it. Josh Gad did his Le Fou, and they did Gaston, you know, with Luke Evans in like a sauna or wherever he was, with Alan Menken on the piano, like in his house. And it's everybody in their homes. And it was kind of amazing to show all these people in their homes and performing these great Disney classic songs. So
that's awesome. So I look forward to seeing that one too.
Cool. Oh, I'm still watching Quibi.
Oh yeah.
Still watching Flipped. They've kind of turned the corner. It's clear that this show was shot in a traditional format, like they wanted to do either half hours or hour comedy, and they just kind of just chopped it up. And instead of taking breaks, they said, we're going to make each one of these segments an episode, and we're going to just, instead of spacing out week to week, we're going to space it out day to day. So every day or every other day, I'll sit and I'll watch a couple of episodes, and it's either 7 or 15 minutes. If you skip a couple days, then there's a couple episodes to watch. So I think that's a very interesting viewing pattern to watch, something interesting to keep you coming back to a space. So I enjoy the theory of what they're trying to do. I'm still interested to see at 90 days whether I'm going to be excited enough to keep it and pay for it. But for now, it's still very provocative to me. Oh, and last thing, I'll leave it with this. Devs finished up this week, and I was enthralled by its ending, but I can't tell. I need a little more time to digest it, whether it was a letdown or not. But it was completely introspective. So you kind of have to take your whole concept of reality and turn it in on itself and then decide whether you're satisfied with something like an ending like this.
Yeah, so it's not what you were expecting, or maybe it's...
It was more than what I was expecting, but is it satisfying is the question.
Oh, I follow you, yeah.
At the moment that it happened, I was like, that's not satisfying. And then they had a couple extra scenes afterwards where the characters come back together, and you feel the show ending, right? And it ends. And then there's that denouement, that moment, that scene after everything has ended, where they've given the characters this free will. And it's almost as if, you know, we've talked about it before, that in a film, all the characters have those 2 hours to live. And at the end of the 2 hours, if they haven't done everything that you wanted them to do, then those characters haven't fulfilled their life as characters on the screen in front of you. This is that idea, that same idea, except they're talking to each other and they're like, now you have the free will to do what you will and to do what you want. And after we spent all these episodes telling you that everything's prescribed, everything is foretold, now you have the true freedom of this space. But the space isn't the consciousness or the reality that we all expected. So does it matter? And do with it what you will. Is it the reality that you're used to? No, it's not. But is it a reality worth living because you have the choice to live it? Maybe. You know what I mean? And I was like, wow, these philosophical questions are so big. Like, how do you put it into a TV series, a miniseries, you know?
I mean, I think that's what's fantastic about being home and being able to watch all these things, and you can watch them all so close. Right. So, you know, because sometimes when I stream things, or maybe they're week to week, Game of Thrones is one of the big ones, mm-hmm. is by the time you start it and by the time you end it, you forget right. where you are, you know? And with something like this, yeah, you get to watch the shows that you want, and you get into the story so much so that it's a
groove, and
right,
and like
exactly.
you said, you know, I'm outside watching it. I watched the final on the picnic benches outside in the breezeway in the dark, you know. So I could have it as loud as I wanted, and I wasn't bothering anyone in the house, and everybody's sleeping. And then, you know, as the final act comes up, Anne's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm outside finishing Devs. I'll be in a minute. You know, like it was just like I had to go outside of my house to be by myself in the crisp, cold evening air, you know? And it was just like the same way when you were out smoking that cigar, you know? So.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, hey, another good episode in the can.
Yes, sir.
And we'll get this going and literally in the can. So I look forward to talking to you next week. We watched a lot this week, as did you, and we'll figure out what we have going coming up here. And
all right. Talk to you later.
All right, man. Hey, you have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rogelio for the music.